Welcome to the Wine Cellar edition of Fire and Wine Podcast. We're your hosts, Barb and Sam, sidestep away from fantasy genre, drunkenly discuss a historical figure, and shine a light on injustices while butchering everyone's names in the process. Pour yourself a glass of wine and join us in the wine cellar.
Sam.
And we're back again.
Doing a wine cellar.
Of Catherine of Aragon.
Dun, dun, dun.
It's been a while. Again.
I would just go ahead and say we're a monthly podcast at this point.
we're when we want to get to it. When we have time, we'll pencil it in. Sorry. If anybody's been like waiting, we suck.
This episode, Catherine of Aragon, is actually a request that we got from one of our listeners a long time ago. I think like a year ago.
Was it a year ago?
But shit. It was requested, and we did say that we would do episodes on requests. So we are being true to our word. And then for this episode, we actually made a sangria.
Because it's Spanish.
We're
and she's the Spanish Queen of England.
I took a pitcher and I dumped two bottles of Pinot Grigio in it. And then I did peaches, lemon, lime, orange, vodka, simple syrup.
Oh no, you put vodka in it again.
I didn't put a lot of vodka.
Okay, good.
So, cheers.
Cheers. Tastes very Spanish.
Yeah, it's good. It's sat overnight, so you really get that peach flavor at the end.
Let's jump into it.
All right, Barb, get us rolling. Talk to us.
Catherine of Aragon. I just like her last name, Aragon, because that reminds me of Viggo Mortensen.
Yes.
Lord of the Rings. Forever my heartthrob. Okay, so Catherine of Aragon was born December 16th, 1485, at the Archiepiscopal Palace of Alcalá de Henares, which is a palace located near Madrid, Spain. Interesting little side note, this building is famous for being the place where the first meeting between the Catholic monarchs and Christopher Columbus, murderer of Indians, was held.
They were the ones that sent him.
Thank you, Spain. Catherine was the daughter of Spanish monarchs Queen Isabella and King Ferdinand II, and youngest surviving child. Her mother, Queen of Aragon, became her army's quartermaster general and armorer. She was known to plot campaigns alongside her husband, Ferdinand. She was also known to turn the art of medieval warfare on its head by building up a very powerful artillery. I thought her mom was pretty cool, although they were pretty racist. I'm just going to say that right now.
Especially against the Moors. They had no religious understanding or tolerance at all.
Her whole story is a struggle for me because I love a strong female.
Yeah, it's just you weren't that good of a person.
No, not at all. Not at all. Catherine's baptismal name was Catalina, but Catherine was adapted when she moved to England.
So just quick side note, Catherine actually spelled her name like a whole bunch of different ways. It was either C-A-T-H or K-A-T-H.
You're just trying to keep people on your toes.
Yeah, like, so, like, if you search Catherine, like, sometimes she signed it with a C, sometimes she signed it with a K, sometimes she signed it Catalina.
Like, a little nasty.
Yeah, she's like, I'll just sign it however I want. You don't know me.
Fuck you. Catalina, I can do what I want. Catherine was said to be quite short in stature with long red hair, wide blue eyes, a round face, and a fair complexion. She was a descendant of the House of Lancaster. I thought that said Lannister. I was like, yep. And she was the third cousin of her father-in-law, Henry VII of England, and the fourth cousin of her mother-in-law, Elizabeth of York.
So Henry VII and Catherine of York are both distant relatives of Edward III, and I do have like a little family tree we can put on the blog. But that would make them related.
Like, that's typical for royalty.
Find people outside your family.
Stop fucking your cousins.
Like, even though you're in, like, even though this chick's from Spain, she's still...
You're still related.
Related, yeah. So Catherine had a tutor. She was actually known for being very well-educated, very intellectual woman. So she had a tutor, Alessandro Geraldini.
Alessandro.
He was a, quote, clerk in holy orders, which basically he was a Renaissance humanist scholar for the Catholic Church, and he was also a bishop. So you know that she's going to be heavily influenced with the Catholic faith.
They're like, we're not going to let this one go astray.
Right.
Keep we're going to make sure she knows good and well.
So actually under his guidance, she studied arithmetic, civil law, classical literature, genealogy, history, philosophy, religion, and theology. And she could fluently read and write in Spanish and Latin. And actually she learned Latin because her mother insisted that she learn Latin, but she could also speak French, and Greek.
Well, she's well-rounded.
She is. Yeah. She also learned domestic skills such as cooking, dancing, drawing, embroidery, music, needlepoint, sewing, and lace making.
Okay, you know, I can respect that. Like, yeah, you're royalty. You're going to be the future queen of England, but you're going to know how to cook.
Yeah.
You're going to know how to take care of yourself because fuck a man.
And make some lace.
Make some lace? Out in the wilderness, you still looking pretty?
I know, you're still spicing that shit up, girl.
Spice it up, baby. We're Spanish.
Catherine was brought up strictly in the Catholic faith, and this would play an enormous role in her life later on.
Does it? Because she's fucking annoying. Sorry, did I say that? Okay, if anybody watches the Star show, The Spanish Princess, I know it's not really, it's like loosely based off her life, but like the portrayal of her, I think, is pretty spot on because it's based off like another book series. It's not fantasy, but it's not actual history.
It's historical fiction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like, she is so fucking annoying with the Catholic card. Like, it's like everything. It's God's cursing me. It's like, no, your husband can't give you a boy.
Well, yeah, we'll get into
if
that.
If we knew science like we knew it today.
All right. So Catherine apparently had a stronger legitimate claim to the English throne than King Henry VII.
Ooh, drama.
Because there's a ton of drama between like illegitimate children. A lot of them were barred from succession to the English throne, like his side of the family. The Tudor monarchy was not quite accepted by all European kingdoms at this time.
Fucking crazy.
Yes. This would have given Catherine and Arthur's male heir an indisputable claim to the throne by strengthening the bloodlines. Because like we said, Catherine is related. So
real quick side note for me before we go on, I'm just going to say right now, I hate the Tudors. They fucking scare me. Like they're fucking crazy. When I look back on like English history, I'm like, those motherfuckers were insane. Isn't that where a lot of the torturing came in?
Yeah.
It was like from them. I know there was always torture, but I feel like it was really heightened with the tutoring because they wanted to get people in line. So like they were more inclined to just torture people.
Well, you saw how many heads Henry VIII cut off.
I mean, it's just reckless abandonment. Like, they're just, oh, he's the king. Let him, he wants to kill the whole town. Oh, okay. Like, what?
Heads will roll, people. That's where it came from.
I don't like the Tudor family at all. I'm sorry.
So because of Catherine's claim to the throne, she was actually betrothed to Arthur Tudor, Prince of Wales, when she was 3 and Arthur was 18 months old.
Ew.
The family was like, let's just lock this shit down. What always kind of made me feel bad for these women was like they were basically brainwashed into thinking that it was their destiny to marry this man. And I'm like, no, you're actually like a child bride. Like, you don't have a choice. It's not your fucking destiny. Yeah.
There was no other way around it. It's like if you were born a female royal back then,
you're
like you were gonna marry somebody.
Yeah.
And you were probably already betrothed to them before, you know, you could even talk.
You're a fucking pawn. It's
Guess
not destiny.
I'm gonna marry him and then he's gonna die of syphilis and I'm gonna kill myself. Okay.
And he's gonna cheat on me without the fucking court. Yeah. Great.
My destiny is to be a member of Destiny's Child. Okay.
Like, yes.
I'm bringing it to medieval times. We need some Beyonce up in here. Y'all need to loosen up.
So the official agreement between the two royal houses was set out in the Treaty of Medina del Campo on March 27th, 1489. That's my very white person trying to say these.
Yeah, I mean, just at this point, if you've been listening, you know we can't fucking pronounce. It's not even like we're not trying. We are trying. We're probably trying too hard.
Henry VII was promised a large dowry from Ferdinand II, and the two countries formed a substantial alliance against their common enemy, France.
It's always France. France is just like trying to party.
Like,
you reckless abandonment country, I can't. Garbage can. We need to stop them. And King Louis is just like, hey,
France is like, we stink. We're rich.
Leave the France. Leave France alone.
I fucking love France.
England's just trying to pick fights with everybody. So according to the history press, Catherine boarded the ship Infanta not once, but twice to make her way to England.
Fuck that. If I didn't make
first
it the first
time wasn't good enough.
Hey, look, that's God telling me that I shouldn't go.
She's looking for signs all the time. There's your sign, sweetie. Stay in Spain. Drink sangria. Get drunk. So the first boat ride ran into a violent storm and had to turn around at the Bay of Biscay. Who came up with that name?
Oh, you know, actually, so I Googled the Bay of Biscay. I don't know. It sounded familiar. There's like 76 known shipwrecks to happen at that bay.
I'd be like, can we just not go there? So apparently the second boat ride wasn't much better. Signs, sweetie. Signs. The gale force winds and giant waves. Fuck that. Terrified everyone on board. I'm looking green. Get me the fuck off this boat. I don't play with water. Okay, so giant waves and terrified everyone on board, and it was thought they may have to turn around again. Yeah, you should have. The journey took 3 months after the first initial 6-day failure and was a toss-up between being baked by the hot sun or being tossed around in treacherous storms. Take me the fuck back home is what I would say.
That sounds like the worst fucking 3 months of my life.
Possibly die going to England, or I could turn around and go to Spain. I'm going to go back to Spain because England is nasty. So on October 2nd, 1501, Catherine's ship finally docked in the harbor at Plymouth. The original plan was for her to dock in Southampton, but whatever, we almost fucking died.
I mean, another sign from God.
Another sign.
He's giving you one last chance to turn around.
Yeah. And also she had like, what was it? Like an enormous party waiting for her when the boat docked. Like, can you imagine? Like, you almost died. You get off and everyone's like, Dr. Alcaraz, her personal doctor, was quoted as saying she could not have received with greater rejoicings if she had been the savior of the world. Okay. I'm not even going to say anything. So the English were super impressed by Catherine's obvious wealth. I guess she came in with
all that bling bling.
All the bling blinging. Bling blinging. So once Catherine landed, she immediately went to the church of St. Andrew's and gave thanks for her safe arrival. And God still was like,
girl, I'm sorry. I tried.
But, I tried, but whatever.
You know, here you are.
You are faithful. I'll give you that. After that, she had to travel about a month to reach Dogmersfield, roughly 176 miles, to meet King Henry VII and Arthur. After that, she had to travel to London, another 43 miles. That's a long journey after two attempts of a boat ride over.
And right. I landed in the wrong place. Now I have to travel essentially a month to get to meet my husband. I meet my husband and they're like, okay, that's great. Let's go get married and let's travel another 43 miles in another direction. Let's
get married, but not here because this place is garbage. 2 days later, Catherine and Arthur married on November 14th, 1501, which would have made Catherine 15 and Arthur around the age of 14. So they're about 1.5 years apart, but they're still fucking children. Shouldn't have been
married.
A child. They got married in St. Paul's Cathedral in London. Little side note, Catherine did not speak any English, but she did pick it up pretty quick. Their wedding night is basically a mystery, and this is going to come into play a little later. It's quoted as saying, the prince emerged from his chamber and called servant Anthony Willoughby over with the words, Willoughby, bring me a cup of ale, for I've been this night in the midst of Spain. Ew. Then to all the others present, masters, it's good pastime to have a wife.
Oh, shut the fuck up.
You're fucking 14. You don't fucking know anything.
You don't know anything about being a husband. Like, that's disgusting.
You little virgin prince.
Look, you should never get married that young. No. Like, you know what? You don't have any business getting married under the age of 25. Just never get married. Amen.
So 5 months after their marriage, Arthur and Catherine came down with the sweating sickness. That's what I had earlier. I feel like I'm plagued with that every day. Some people die of it, though, unfortunately, like Arthur did. On April 2nd, 1502, in Ludwell, English-Welsh borders at the age of 15. So if you don't
What is the sweating sickness?
It's like a sweat you break out with suddenly without any obvious cause. Well, maybe it is.
Oh, so you're, like, you're actually like sick.
It's a sense of heat, rapid pulse, yes. Intense thirst, yes. Check, check, check. Accompanied with the sweat, yes. Have all of that. Maybe we have sweat sickness. But it comes with palpitation and pain in the heart.
It sounds pretty serious.
It's called the sweatness, but is that more like a flu? Historians speculate that Arthur actually passed away from either influenza,
which is what you were just saying,
tuberculosis, or untreated type 1 diabetes, which I am going to say it was probably a combination of
definitely influenza.
And if he had diabetes, I know when you have the flu, most people get over it, but if you have underlying ailments, it can make it
just makes
worse.
Those
people that do die from the flu usually have some type of underlying
ailment. Diabetes, you can get gout easily, which is a heart disease. Uh-huh. So get it.
Especially back then, they didn't even fucking know what any of that is. So looking back on history and a little bit that I know about Arthur, like, he was said to be small and like kind of frail, and maybe people would look at him and think he's unhealthy.
So we're gonna get into that in a little bit.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, cool. That is a point that does come up later, actually. But no, you're right. He actually was like a pretty sickly child. Mm-hmm. So even someone that frail and young getting the flu back in the day and them not properly knowing how to treat it. Yeah, death, I would say, is a probable outcome.
Yeah.
Obviously, the king and queen were devastated over the loss of their son. However, they must have found some solace because Queen Elizabeth was pregnant shortly after Arthur's death. Sadly, however, misfortune strikes again when Queen Elizabeth goes into labor on February 2nd, 1503, and the newborn baby girl, who they named Catherine. She passed away. And then the very next day, Queen Elizabeth succumbed to the complications surrounding the difficult birth. So, yeah, it's pretty sad.
Yeah.
So they lost a son, and then they not lost even a year
the
later,
new
they
baby
lost
a and the mother.
New baby, yeah, and mom. So obviously, King Henry VII is in a bad way after losing his son and his wife and a newborn baby girl. Obviously, it would take a toll on your mental and physical health at that point.
Right.
So the chronicler Polydore Vergil noted Henry was, quote, careworn and sapped of energy with a sallow complexion. So he had graying hair and rotten teeth at this point.
Oh, brush your teeth, fool.
Now, like, I know back in the day they did brush their teeth. They used, like, some sort of form of, like, baking soda and, like, mint leaves to, like, clean their mouth. Right. So it's not like they just didn't care about dental hygiene.
I mean, they had to,
because
they didn't ever be walking around with just gums for their teeth. Like,
right. I mean, once you reach a level of depression, you just don't care.
No, I mean, I get it. But you're the king. But
yeah. I mean, someone could brush your teeth for you.
I mean, literally.
At that stage.
You got someone to wipe your ass.
Yeah.
You can get someone to brush your teeth.
I'd be like, why didn't you brush my teeth?
That's
What's
your
wrong
fault.
With you?
This is your fault. The reason my mouth is rotten is not me. It's you. You didn't do your job. Off his head.
So at this point, there's only one heir left for the Tudor household, which is the young Prince Henry. And he was only 11 years old. I mean, can we pick another fucking name? Henry and Henry and Henry. It gets worse as we go on.
It just carries on.
So Henry was 11 years old at this time, and the king was worried that the York household would try to steal the throne, because the York household and the Tudor household were at odds on the holding the throne. It's I never really got into it, but I guess it was...
I'm team York because I hate the Tudors.
Yeah.
I don't even know anything about them. But
fuck the Tudors.
Good God, those Tudors were terrible. Okay.
King Henry is now 46 years old, and he decided that he will take Catherine of Aragon as his wife.
Ew.
And she's 17 at this point.
With rotten teeth.
Now, her mom, Queen Isabella of Castile, she's not here for it.
Good.
When she learned of this proposal, she stated that it was, quote, an evil abomination that offends the ears.
Well, I don't disagree.
And demanded that Catherine be returned to Spain.
Go back to Spain, sweetie.
The signs are there.
Read the stars, Catherine.
Many times we need to say this.
God could not be any more clear.
He
has spoke through your mother. It's an abomination.
Like, if you're as devout as you say you are, you should be picking up on this.
I mean,
at this
I'm
point.
Just saying, as a Catholic light, I'm picking up on the signs.
The God senses are tingling in me.
They're tingling. Tingling.
Tingled. So, of course, money is involved in all of this,
of
obviously. Catherine's dowry was a whopping 200,000 gold crowns, which only half of it had been paid at this point. King Henry was refusing to return the money to King Ferdinand of Spain, and he wanted the other half to be paid in full. So, basically, they were at odds because Spain was like, okay, well, we paid you 100,000 gold crown, but your king died. So, you really didn't hold out your end of the bargain.
How dare you for letting him die?
Right.
In the sweats.
So, why should I pay out the other half when my daughter is no longer going to be a queen? And well, I get it.
Yeah, no, not
and
wrong.
So they're like, send Catherine back and give us the rest of the money and let's just call it a day.
Mm-hmm.
And King Henry's like, no.
I got a dick and it works. It's coming.
Well, because England is broke. Right now at this time, and they really need the money. England's not in a good way. Catherine's mom was like, I got a plan. She is going to draw Henry's attention away from Catherine, and she offered up her niece, who is a 26-year-old Johanna. She's the widowed queen of Naples. Now, King Henry's like, okay, this might work, but first, tell me she's pretty, and tell me she's got big knockers.
Oh my God.
Yeah,
your wife just died. Fuck, man.
And so, like, his, like, people reported back, like, oh, yeah, she's gorgeous and she has pretty big tits.
Her boobs are huge, man.
And he was like, all right, this works. I'm okay with it. Ultimately, it failed. There's a lot of, like, political and money involved, and it just didn't work out. But it did kind of, like, stray him from wanting to marry Catherine. So, I mean, it worked, I guess. Catherine's kind of in limbo here at this point, and it drags on for 7 years. She is still living in court in England, and King Henry gave her little to actually no money to live on until her father paid up the rest of her dowry, which is fucked up because that's not her fault.
Right.
So she had to resort to selling her personal items for cash. Like, she had, like, really nice plates, she had jewels, some old wedding gifts, and she actually ended up writing to her family during this time stating she was a prisoner at the Durham House in London. And King Henry also forbade her from returning to Spain, so he was using her as a political pawn at this point, because he's like, I want my money. Like, fuck your family.
Holding
I need to get paid.
I want my money.
Yeah, like, I don't know what's going to happen, but you're going to pay me, like, somehow. Here's a small sample of a letter that Catherine wrote to her father asking for money while she was in London. quote, "Your Highness shall know, as I have often written to you, that since I came into England, I have not had a single maravedi," which is like a medieval Spanish copper coin, "except a certain sum which was given me for food, and this such a sum that it did not suffice without my having many debts in London, and that which troubles me more is to see my servants and maidens so at a loss, and that they have not the wherewith to get clothes." So, like, she's not so much worried about herself, but she's, like, super worried about, like, her ladies in waiting. She's like, this is fucked. Like, they can't even, like, take care of themselves at this point because I can't pay them. Which really shows, like, a characteristic of Catherine. Like, she's very selfless at this point. However, when she wrote this letter, she was suffering from a form of malaria. So she was really sick at this time.
What the fuck? How many times did she get sick?
Yeah, she was very sick. She was in debt and she couldn't afford any food. So obviously things are not going well for her at all.
So in November 1504, Catherine's mother passed away, which would ultimately lower Catherine's value in the marriage market. So it was agreed that Catherine would marry Prince Henry VIII.
Okay, so just we'll just fuck over the part that her mom died.
Like, oh, your mom's dead? Okay, well, I guess you can marry this guy.
Like, you're not so valuable anymore.
It's God, fucked. They really just threw women around like just dirty panties. Yeah, like, you know, I don't have a
weird
need
just
for
dollar
anymore.
Signs basically at that point.
Yeah. So this would also guarantee that England would remain allies with Spain and receive the rest of Catherine's massive dowry. Marriage to Arthur's brother depended on the Pope granting a dispensation because canon law forbade a man to marry his brother's widow. So Henry had to make a substantial payment to Rome for granting the dispensation.
Of course, because Catholics will overlook anything as long as you can pay it.
You have the money?
We'll Sonny, let it slide.
We can look the other way. Go about your day, sir. And Catherine had to make a written testimony that her marriage to Arthur had never been consummated during their 5 months of married life. Two horny teenagers never consummated. I say nay.
Bullshit.
According to On the Tudor Trail,
what the fuck is that? It's a website. Actually, it has a lot of information if you guys are interested.
It's interesting, but I just think it's funny. I'm immature. Catherine had said that Arthur shared her bed only 7 nights in their marriage. Okay, that's enough to stick a
penis
in.
Because they're 14 years old. They don't know what to do.
He's been inside Spain.
Bring me my ale.
Bring me my ale. I felt Spain. Oh, God. 14 years old bragging about that. Jesus. Okay, so instead of a lusty prince, her Spanish entourage described him as a sickly youth. Well,
like,
they're not
wrong. Like what you just said. Yeah.
Arthur
like
is believed to have been born 1 month premature. Some historians say he was smaller than Catherine and she was a petite woman.
That's believable.
It is.
100%.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Another attendant testified, Francisca de Caressa, whatever, who was in charge of dressing and undressing the queen and who she liked and confided in a lot. Who was looking sad and telling the other ladies that nothing had passed between Prince Arthur and his wife, which surprised everyone and made them laugh at him. In 1507, Catherine's father, Ferdinand, appointed her as the Spanish ambassador to England. This made Catherine the first female ambassador in European history.
Get it, girl!
Go, go. Catherine was a good ambassador, too. She managed to negotiate the sometimes tense relations between her family and her husband.
Because the Tudors are
Fucking assholes. Nuts. Her family's probably fucking crazy, too.
One example is the signing of the Treaty of Westminster, which Catherine influenced. This formed an alliance between her father, Ferdinand, and England against their common enemy, Viva la France!
Leave France alone!
God damn it, they just want to drink their sparkling wine and set off fireworks. Leave France alone.
Why is everybody so mean against France?
So actually, King Henry VII contracted tuberculosis and he finally passed away. Because he was...
Get the fuck out of here, old man.
Okay, because he was holding Catherine as a political pawn and wouldn't let her marry Henry. He was being a dick about the entire situation. So when he actually died, he died in the summer 1509, Catherine was free to marry Prince Henry the fucking crazy eighth. The two were married on June 11th, 1509. Catherine was the age of 24 and Henry was the ripe age of 18, which is much better than 14 and 15.
Still gross.
Yeah. 7 years after Prince Arthur's death. So the two were wed in private ceremony in the Church of the Observant Friars outside of Greenwich Palace. Henry wrote a letter to his father-in-law, Fernandad. He said, quote, "My wife and I be in good and perfect love as any two creatures can be." Now, keep in mind that Henry VIII had little to no education on ruling because they just assumed this sickly, premature little fuck was going to rule England. I don't know why they never thought of a backup plan for the other son.
Because they never do.
Right, that's so they fucking short sighted. My one son will live.
He'll be fine. Give him some prunes.
So Henry VII gave Henry VIII few responsibilities even after the death of Arthur. Young Henry was strictly supervised and did not appear in public. As a result, he ascended the throne, quote, "untrained in the exact art of kingship."
And that's why he fucking went on a murderous rampage. Henry and Catherine had their coronation on June 23rd, 1509 in Westminster Abbey, and it was described as a grand affair with a banquet in Westminster Hall. As Catherine wrote to her father, "Our time is spent in continuous festival." So in the beginning, the king and queen lived in marital bliss. They read, played music, danced, and shared deep discussions as intellectual equals. According to History Extra, it's quoted as saying, "He adored her. She was, we are told, the most beautiful creature in the world. She was 24, plump and pretty, and had beautiful red gold hair that hung below her hips." Henry spoke openly of the joy and felicity he had found with Catherine.
I just love the fact that he was like bragging the fact that she was plump.
Because that was like a thing back then. Yeah. You wanted to be like, being skinny was like, ew, why are you so skinny? Okay, so 2 months after their marriage, Catherine announced her first pregnancy, but it ended in a stillborn child, January 1510. A son was born January 1st, 1511, Henry, Duke of Cornwall.
Can we pick another name?
What is with the Henry?
Are we Henry?
Sorry, Henry Cavill, but what the fuck is up with the name? So in his honor, guns were fired from the Tower of London and the city bells were rung. Beacons were lit and free wine was distributed to all the population. Now we're talking England. Now we are talking.
Here we go. This is how France lives.
France is quaking.
France free is wine? Like, bitch.
What?
Yes.
Yes.
This I'm is going to join England's
side. Forget all the war. I mean, we're good, buddy. We're good.
France is like setting wine. They're like, yes. You people need it. Y'all are some uptight fuckers.
We need to get them drunk and get them off our case. Give him some wine and some baguettes. So sadly, on February 22nd, 1511, after only 52 days of life, the young prince died suddenly. That's terrible.
I mean, that's just absolutely heartbreaking.
She did her duty. And then God, again, gave another sign.
God was giving signs left and right.
He's like, you know what?
Please get out
of this. He didn't listen the first few times. Let me send you a real traumatic sign.
He's like, pay attention. Get the fuck out of England.
But no, she's still like, I am the queen of England.
It's my destiny.
It is my destiny. So Catherine would become pregnant 6 times. Six times.
Isn't 6 an evil number?
It is. It's a sign. But only one child survived childhood, and that would be Princess Mary. She was born February 18th, 1516. That is Lily's birthday. Despite the setbacks they faced with fertility, Catherine was an able and supportive consort to Henry and popular with her subjects. And she played along with Henry in all of his games. For example, author John Edwards writes, "At least pretended to be surprised by the charades in which he and his noble friends sometimes engaged, including the occasion in which they invaded her chamber dressed as Robin Hood and his merry men." I mean, I'm here for it. Robin Hood Men in Tights. You got Dave Chappelle up in here. Let's go. I am loving it. Tudor's finally
did
something.
Can you imagine being a queen? You're like hanging out in your room and your husband and his friends busting in like Men in Tights.
That's what happens when you marry a child. I'm just gonna say it. You're a grown woman and you married an 18-year-old boy.
For 6 months in 1513, she served as regent of England with the titles, quote, "governor of the realm and captain general," while Henry VIII was in France waging war against Francis I.
Leave France alone.
Right.
They just need to be great.
Just stop fighting with them.
Stop fighting, start fucking. Okay.
That's all we're saying here. We're here just to love.
Just to love.
So according to the Smithsonian Magazine, quote, "she had the power to summon troops, to appoint sheriffs, to sign warrants, and to get money from the treasurer of the chamber." Catherine was in her element as regent, and while Henry VIII was away, Scotland's King James IV declared war on England, who was at this time an ally of France, because Scotland knows what the fuck is up.
Leave Scotland and France alone! Have you ever watched Outlander? Scots can live in France and be fine. Why can't we all? Have you ever noticed when, like, England meddles with other countries, like, France is usually there, like, with the other country, like, it's okay, I got you.
Right.
Because England's a bunch of dicks.
Like, when England and the United States went to war in the Revolutionary War and France was on our side.
France was like, oh, I got you.
Wee. Fuck English. So Catherine was pregnant at this time, and she relished the opportunity to exercise her full authority. She's like, let me fuck some shit up. So she mobilized forces across England, communicated with local authorities to figure out how many men and horses were available to recruit. She was like, went to like small towns and like little countryside, and she's like, what you got? Let me know. We're about to go to war.
We need to fight.
So she dispatched 10,000 pounds for artillery, gunners, a fleet of 8 ships, and supplies ranging from grains to beer and armor, because that's what you need when you go.
I mean, I don't want anything else. If I gotta go to war, give me some grain and some beer and some armor.
She's not wrong. Like,
I got you.
She learned a lot from her mother, I feel like, in this point.
It was cool to see this in The Spanish Princess. Did you get to that episode?
I haven't gotten that far.
They do show this in there, and that was really cool. She was like pregnant wearing like full fucking armor. I was like, yes, queen.
Oh, I'm about to get there. Okay. So Catherine then left the safety in London and headed north towards the English-Scottish border with 1,500 sets of armor and ready to face the Scots. The queen did not, in fact, ride out into battle like Joan of Arc would have. She was very, again, heavily pregnant at this time, but she did have armor made for herself to fit her belly. However, when the battle did break out, she was about 60 miles away at the time.
Yeah, in the show, I think they show her a little bit more involved. And I thought the armor was cool because she was pregnant, but like they did do the whole like fitting the armor to her belly. I was like, that's pretty.
I think that's like awesome. One of the like still shots they show like on Hulu is like the golden armor around her belly. Yeah, that's pretty awesome. So actually, on September 9th, 1513, was the Battle of Flodden between the Kingdom of England and the Kingdom of Scotland, and this did result in an English victory. So about 10,000 Scots, including 12 earls, 14 lords, an archbishop, a bishop, 2 abbots, and the King James himself lay dead. Comparatively, the smaller English army only lost around 1,500 men. This is known to be the largest battle between the two kingdoms. The fact that the ruling head of this at the time was a woman and not like a man is just astounding to me.
Well, she did it for Henry because it was a lot of her painstakingly going around collecting shit and getting stuff ready and getting people in line. Like
she did a lot of work, and then she gave all the glory to her husband. So the Scottish king's ending was actually pretty grotesque. According to the historian Leander de Lisle, quote, James's left hand was almost severed. His throat was gashed and an arrow was shot through his lower jaw.
That's gruesome.
This kind of makes me love her. Catherine wanted to send James's embalmed body to Henry while he was in France.
Let me give my husband a gift.
Luckily, someone was like, ew, girl. No.
We can't do that. It's gonna be gross.
So instead, she sent Henry VIII a piece of the Scottish king's bloody coat, and she wrote to him, quote, to my thinking, this battle hath been, to your grace and all your realm, the greatest honor that could be, and more than should you win all the crown of France. This obviously won over the hearts of the English, and she provided a very strong role model for women who could fight and rule during this time.
Catherine prized education, most importantly, educating women. She continued to deepen and broaden her and Mary's studies and donated large sums of money to several colleges. The controversial book, The Education of Christian Women by Juan Louis Vives, which advocated women's rights to education, was dedicated to and commissioned by Catherine in 1524 for her daughter Mary. I don't know why that fucking sentence was so funny to me, but it was. However, trouble starts a-brewing because old Henry VIII is demanding a male heir. Catherine's like, I can't do it.
That's up to God, you, my lord.
Side note, a long civil war from 1135 to 54 had been fought the last time a woman, Empress Matilda, had inherited the throne. The disasters of civil war were still fresh in living memory from the War of the Roses. To continue lineage, Henry believed he had 3 options. Legitimize his bastard, Henry Fitzroy.
Henry again!
Because we're unoriginal Tudors. We like porridge. Marrying off their daughter, Mary, and hoping she produces a grandson. Or finding a new wife.
Bum, bum, bum. Bing, bing,
here comes Anne Boleyn.
Anne was one of Catherine's ladies in waiting, and Henry was like here for it. However, Anne kept refusing him and insisting she didn't want to be one of the king's mistresses. And just a disgusting side note, the king was like banging her sister Mary. She was like, keeping I know you're sleeping family. With my sister, and that's gross. But then she went and married him, so I don't know.
Well, didn't Anne like have sex with her brother or try to have sex with her brother? And that's the whole reason she got her head cut off.
I didn't give Anne any research because I wanted to focus on Catherine on this, but no, I didn't know that. Doesn't get any better.
I mean, Game of Thrones has just kind of like
desensitized us a lot of things. Yeah, no, I totally feel you. I'm like, well, could be
worse.
We're
all fucking cousins anyways.
So Catherine had gone through 6 births at this time, and it had taken a toll on her. So according to the king, she had, quote, lost her figure. She's aged, and her hair had turned prematurely gray. Now, the romance between Anne and Henry is known to be one of the history's most captivating love story turned tragedy.
Love story.
Bullshit. Yeah.
Love story.
So it is said that it's Anne adultery. Possessed a certain charm and wit that eventually infatuated Henry. So within a year, he proposed. However, the problem was that he was still fucking married to his wife. Henry began to believe that his marriage to Catherine was cursed and was convinced that God was displeased that he had married his brother's widow, and now he was punishing him by denying him a son, when in reality, it's your own balls.
It's your own sperm.
So he actually did approach Catherine and he asked for an annulment, but in the Catholic religion, divorce is obviously a gigantic no-no.
Unless you get money.
Yeah. Which we'll get there. And Catherine basically told him to, like, fuck off. So Catherine didn't want this annulment to bring into question the legitimacy of Mary's chances of inheriting the throne. I mean, kudos to her for holding steadfast in this, so.
So then Henry had a great idea.
Oh, God, this dumbass.
This is a great fucking idea right here. Henry's like, I'm a genius. Henry suggested Catherine retire to a nunnery, which she responded, God never called me to a nunnery. I am the king's true and legitimate wife. So basically, she's like, until God calls me personally and says I'm going to a nunnery, I'm staying right fucking here. Henry needed to get crafty if he was going to get his way out of this marriage. And oh boy, did he.
He really did.
So June 29th, 1529, Henry VIII and Catherine were at Leganti Court at Blackfriars. The Leganti Court was set up to examine the validity of King Henry VIII's marriage to Queen Catherine, as he felt he had disobeyed God by marrying his brother's widow. Not forget the fact that you got permission from the Pope.
Oh, okay.
Let's go back in time, sir. It's not about you. You son of a bitch.
Also, this is... You've been in for so 20 bad. Years now. Like, why are you going to bring this up now?
Now we're feeling remorseful. So when it was Catherine's turn to speak, she stood up, kneeled at Henry's feet, and said, Sir, I beseech you, for all the love that hath been between us, and for the love of God, let me have justice, Jesus Lord.
Amen.
Take of me some pity and compassion, for Amen. I am a poor woman. You don't give me a fucking allowance. A stranger born out of your dominion. I have here no assured friends, and much less impartial counsel. Alas, sir. Wherein I have offended you, or what occasion of displeasure have I deserved? I have been to you a true and humble and obedient wife, ever comfortable to your will and pleasure, that never said or did anything to the contrary thereof,
Preach.
Being always well pleased and contented with all things with wherein you had any delight or dalliance. Whether it were in little or much.
Ooh, God burn, damn.
Burn. I never grudged in word or countenance. I'm getting so passionate. Or show or a spark of discontent. I loved all those whom ye loved only for your sake. Whether I had no cause and whether there were my friends or enemy. This 20 years or more I have been your true wife, and by me ye have had divers children. Although Wait, it
What
has-
does divers children mean?
She's fucking on a roll. Please God to call them out of this world. I'm not gonna question it. Which hath been no default in me. A.K.A. it's your sperm, sir.
Fuck you.
I'm smarter than you think. When ye had me at first, I take God to my judge. I was a true maid without touch of man. I love how she's like in front of everyone and she's like, no, I'm a
She's like, I got some tea and receipts. We're gonna right here. We're doing this.
And whether it be true or no, I put it to your conscience. If there be any cause by the law that ye can allege against me, either of dishonesty or any other impediment, to banish and put me from you. I am well content to depart, to my great shame and dishonor. And if there be none, then here I most lowly beseech you. Let me remain in my former estate. Therefore, I most humbly require you, in the way of charity and for the love of God, who is the just judge, mind you, not these motherfuckers.
God damn, she went there.
To spare me the extremity of this new court until I may be advised what way and order my friends in Spain, hey, I got friends in Spain, will advise me to take.
I'm gonna listen to my friends in Spain because y'all some corrupt
fuckers.
We're
gonna murder y'all. And if ye will not extend to me so much impartial favor, your pleasure then be fulfilled, and to God I commit my cause. She then turned on her heel and walked out of the court while saying, on, it makes no matter, for it is no impartial court for me, therefore I will not tarry.
Go on.
God, she's so great.
So the king went to the Pope to have his marriage annulled, stating it should have never happened in the first place, and even went so far to state that Catherine was not a virgin when they got married. He went through all this trouble to convince them that she was.
And now she's not.
20 years later, that punani was not fresh.
Now it strikes me.
A little loosey goosey. Even though my brother was sickly. I wonder. The Pope refused the annulment, thank you. And some believed it was due to Catherine's nephew, Charles V. Understandably, because Charles had previously taken the Pope hostage for a year. Probably why she's so ballsy. They're like the mafia. She's like, I'm not afraid. I got people. I know things. I can put a stop to this. Don't worry.
Now, keep in mind that Catherine is still, like, very popular among Henry's subjects, and Catherine still has powerful supporters in court, too. Obviously, her nephew just stole the Pope. So
just like that. Just stole. You're coming with me. I'm going to need this later.
A lot of her supporters were very reluctant to see any divisions created in the church. So then Henry was like, you know what? I'm going to use Mary against you. And he separated mother and daughter. So he sent Mary to live around the country in various dilapidated residences, and Catherine would never see her daughter again. So the refusal from the Pope would lead Henry to reject papal authority and initiate the English Reformation.
Is this basically where he's like, we're not Catholic anymore?
Yeah.
He's going to make his own religion, the Protestants, because he doesn't want to follow the Pope.
Yep. A year later, Catherine was now banished from court and her rooms were given to Anne. Catherine wrote to her nephew, Charles V. She's like, I'm about to reach out and fuck this motherfucker up. So Catherine says, quote, my tribulations are so great, my life so disturbed by the plans daily invented to further the king's wicked intention. The surprises which the king gives me with certain persons of his council are so mortal, and my treatment is what God knows, that it is enough to shorten 10 lives, much more mine.
Go kill him.
Now shit kind of hits the fan at this point. So Henry became the supreme head of the church in England, and he split from Rome entirely. So this is where they created their own church. So Henry's new role as head of the Church of England meant that he and all subsequent English monarchs only had one higher authority, who's God himself. So many regarded the church as too rich and too powerful, as priests were abusing their new positions, which happened in the Catholic Church as well. Newly appointed Archbishop of Canterbury, Thomas Cranmer, declared that Henry and Catherine's marriage was null and void after 24 years of being married.
But I want to know how that works for someone who's a devout Catholic. And even though this is just like a new thing, like Catherine still answers to the Pope. Is that true to her? I mean, obviously she's going to fight this.
Right. So the further down we go, you'll see that she still calls herself his wife. Mm-hmm. Like, she never moves on from that fact. The marriage was formally annulled on May 23rd, 1533 by the passing of the Act in Restraint of Appeals by Parliament. The annulment and Parliament's passing of a Act of Secession meant that Catherine's daughter, who is Mary, was declared illegitimate for the throne. Also, Catherine was forbidden from using the title, quote, Queen of England, and now she's given the new title, Dowager Princess of Wales.
After all she did for this motherfucker.
Right. Now, if you remember, dowager is a term used for widow, and you remember it from the Bridgerton episode, dowager. So, I mean, it's not even, like, really a title at this point. It's just kind of, like, an acknowledgement of who you were married to. So it's not even,
all
like, giving you anything.
All this for some fresh pussy. Like, it's just a slap in the face of a woman, like, who literally went to battle for you, wanted to send you an embalmed body to France. It was talked out of it.
It's so disrespectful.
It's so disrespectful.
Even the fact that she's sitting there basically saying, like, just give me a house, stay my husband, I won't question.
It's just, he was so selfish at this
time. He's deranged.
Yeah.
He's deranged. The whole fucking Tudor line was deranged. Like, I'm sorry.
Until the end of her life, Catherine would refer to herself as Henry's only lawful wedded wife and England's only rightful queen, and her servants continue to address her by that title. Henry and Anne Boleyn married in a private ceremony in London on January 25th, 1533. So after the divorce, Catherine was quoted saying, "I would rather be a poor beggar's wife and be sure of heaven than a queen of all the world and stand in doubt thereof by reason of my own consent." This bitch is just throwing shade left and right. I fucking love her. So Catherine would move a couple times in her life. She lived in the Moor Castle. She lived in the Royal Palace of Hatfield, the Elsling Palace, Amptill Castle, and Buckden Towers.
Finally, she moved to Kimbolton Castle, where she confined herself to one room, which she left only to attend mass, dressed only in the hair shirt of the Order of St. Francis, aka sackcloth, and fasted continuously. Catherine was forbidden to see and communicate with her daughter Mary, but she had some insiders who would discreetly pass letters between the two. Henry would only allow Mary and Catherine to see each other if they would acknowledge Anne Boleyn as the new queen. Both refused. You can't fuck with the mother-daughter bond, you can't. Mary was probably like, my dad's a dick. So during the last day of Catherine's life, she wrote a letter to King Henry, who she had not seen in 5 years. "My most dear lord, king and husband, the hour of my death drawing on, the tender love I owe you, forceth me to commend myself to you and to put you in remembrance of the health and safeguard of your soul, which you ought to prefer to all worldly matters, even vaginas, for which you have cast me into many calamities and yourself into many troubles. For my part, I pardon you everything and wish you devoutly to pray God that he will pardon you also. For the rest, I commend unto you our daughter Mary, beseeching you to be a good father to her."
Because you haven't been.
Because you've been shitty. "Lastly, I make this vow that mine eyes desire you above all things." Aww. "Farewell, Catherine, Queen of England."
I mean, my eyes desire you above all things. I mean, that shows that forever she still a devoted was in wife, love with
even
him.
Though he was basically like, goodbye.
Yeah.
The fact that she signed the letter, Catherine, Queen of England, was one final act of defiance toward her former husband.
Yes. I mean, that whole letter was an act of defiance.
I'm here for it. Catherine's health was failing, in part due to her constant fasting and cancer. Died at the age of 50 on January 9th, 1536 at Kimbolton Castle.
Let me just say, the shit surrounding her death is some tea.
So at the time, it was rumored that she was poisoned.
Yeah.
After, or I wouldn't doubt it, because those Tudors.
Yeah.
Fucking crazy. After her autopsy, there was black growth on her heart, which is believed to have been melanarmic sarcoma. When the news of Catherine's death reached the king, it's rumored that Anne Boleyn wore yellow for mourning. Another rumor is that the king wore yellow and celebrated the news. That's so fucked up.
Yeah.
Ugh, she did so much for you. Another theory is that yellow was said to have been the Spanish color of mourning. Other sources state the color yellow is worn for hope and renewal. We'll never truly know. And I think because they're petty bitches, why would right. they honor her by like, wearing what's Spanish color? What's a happier color to wear
than yellow?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fucked up.
So the former queen was buried in Peterborough Cathedral due to her position as a Dowager Princess of Wales. Henry did not attend the funeral and forbade Mary to attend. That's fucked up. I'm just going to say that. It's all fucked up. Oh, but here we go. God's vengeance. On the day of Catherine's funeral, Queen Anne Boleyn miscarried a baby boy. So Mary did become a queen in her own right. Crowned Mary the First of England, 1553. Mary would reign until 1558 when she was succeeded by her half-sister, Elizabeth I of England.
In the 20th century, George V's wife, Mary of Teck, had Catherine's grave upgraded and the tomb now bears the title Catherine, Queen of England.
Good.
Now, this is actually pretty awesome. Every year at the cathedral, they have a Catherine of Aragon festival. They do prayers and they have a procession to her grave in which candles, pomegranates, and flowers are placed on her grave as an offering. And they also have like Tudor themed events, which I feel like the Tudor themed events might kind of be like a stab in the heart. But the pomegranate is, if you don't know, like that was Catherine's sigil and it was supposed to be for like fertility, which kind of backfired in a way.
Well, she tried.
She did. Yeah. So if you're interested, you can go to the Peterborough website, which is www.peterborough/cathedral.org.uk. And on this service commemorating the 470th anniversary of Catherine's death, the Spanish ambassador to the United Kingdom attended. Why did it take you 470 times to show up?
Took you long enough there, pal.
Now, there's a statue in her birthplace as a young woman holding a book and a rose. Also, there are many places in Ampthill that are named after Catherine. Also in Ampthill, there is a cross in Ampthill Great Park named Queen Catherine's Cross in her honor. It is on the site of the castle where she was sent during her divorce from the king.
Damn. I don't know. I just feel like they just, the whole world just did her dirty.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, she's not without her flaws, but it's like she did a lot for King Henry and his reign when it first started. I don't think he was that popular when he first started. And she garnered a lot of interest and intrigue and support. Because even after he had their marriage annulled, she still had a very large support, you know, from English people.
I mean, obviously she's a very intellectual woman. And I think she survived as long as she did because she knew how to basically play the game. I mean, you can't fight a king when it comes to divorce, but goddamn, this woman fought the king.
Oh, like, yeah. I love her last letter. She's like, Catherine, Queen of England. And don't you forget it. And honestly, looking back on it now, and I maybe the Spanish princess kind of played on it too. I feel like they kind of glossed over a lot of the fact that she was held hostage by King Henry the VII. They kind of also made it seem like she was like, no, I'm staying. I'm not leaving. I'm staying. I want to be the Queen of England. That was kind of the thing that kind of
irritated. It's my destiny sort of thing.
That's the thing that kind of irritated me with the show, because I'm like, well, I'm like, she was actually being held hostage. Like
in reality, she was being held against her will and she was starving. She was sick. So it wasn't as romantic. I mean, obviously the show needs to.
But the show is based off of a fantasy book, kind of. Like, it's just, yeah. I mean, again, I'm not watching that for, like, historical value, but I think that's the only thing kind of, like, confused me, and now it irritates me, because I'm like, why are they going to make this, like, a romantic thing? Like, the guy, the whole family's fucking narcissist, and they're crazy. Like, I just imagine, like, if she was actually given the decision of her own to leave, which, do you think she would have left and gone back 100%. To Spain?
She would have left before she even married Henry.
I just have to say that this proves to me that you get these men in power and their whole objective is to get women to submit.
Oh, 100%.
And to do their duty. And here we have a prime example of a woman who submitted and did her duty and she was still treated like shit. And I get like he's scared because he has no lineage and Tudor family, blah, 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 blah. But it's like, okay, but if you're a man of faith.
Put the faith into like the women in your life,
yeah.
Which he wouldn't do. He refused to do and mm-hmm. Which let him down. I mean, I don't want to get into Henry.
This
episode's not about him. It's about Catherine. But it's just, you just can't help but to bring him into her downfall mm-hmm. because he was her downfall.
Yep.
The letter that you read, like she continued to love him until the day she died.
Yep. Ever devoted wife until her last breath.
I swear to God, I could never be her. She was mm-hmm. like the most devoted wife you could ask for. And yep. She was still sent to rot mm-hmm. in a room by herself.
And not allowed to see her daughter.
Yeah.
Like what did she do to deserve that? Like I just.
Nothing.
Send her somewhere nicer. Leave her with her daughter. Like, you know.
Send her to France.
Send her to France. France would have treated her
France
right.
Would have tore that shit up. They'd be like, oh, you Catholic? Drink some wine. It's the blood of God. They would have somehow twisted that shit.
Relax. You're fucking fine now.
All right. I really don't want to end it heavy, but yeah, I mean.
But she deserved better.
Yeah, absolutely.
100%.
Thanks for our listener for requesting this episode. I learned a lot about Catherine doing this that I didn't know about previously. Anyways, if you guys have any other suggestions, we did have someone reach out to us just recently on Facebook about the Black Sails, which I'm totally checking out, Barb. I don't know if you are. Lock and Key, someone suggested to us. I don't even know if it's on Netflix anymore. We love to cover women in history on Wine Cellar. So if you have a woman in history specifically for Wine Cellar, please let us know.
Bye.
Bye. Thanks for listening to the Wine Cellar edition of Fire and Wine Podcast. If you'd like to nominate a historical figure for us to cover in the future, please visit our website, fireandwinepodcast.com, or send us a DM on Instagram, Fire and Wine Podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in.
There's a long civil. This is getting bad. This is getting so bad.
Bad.
I've been watching The Nanny.